right here on VOA Africa.
This is Wednesday, July 17th, VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, House Democrats hold a symbolic vote condemning the president.
These comments from the White House are disgraceful and disgusting, and these comments are racist.
Millions are displaced in Asia as a monsoon bears down. Also ahead, Beyonce explains how her music for a new movie is infused with love for Africa. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump is standing by controversial remarks blasting four Democratic congresswomen of color, even as criticism mounts that the president's comments and tweets amount to racist attacks. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has the latest on the controversy and the political and racial divides that have many Americans anxious.
At the White House, a defiant President Trump stood by previous comments urging four women Democratic House members to leave the country if they are unhappy.
You look at what they've said. I have clips right here. The most vile, horrible statements about our country, about Israel, about others. It's up to them. They can do what they want. They can leave. They can stay. But they should love our country, and they should work for the good of our country.
Trump's comments aimed at the four Democrats of color brought a broadside of criticism from critics accusing him of being a racist and a bigot. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
Look, I think what President Trump did was just despicable, to appeal to the worst in human instincts, to divide America. Is not what any president has done.
There was outrage as well from several Democratic presidential contenders, including the frontrunner, Joe Biden, campaigning in Iowa.
There has never been a president in American history who has been as so openly racist and divisive as this man. Imagine what it says around the world.
Some Republicans spoke up and accused the president of trying to divide the country.
I wish we'd have moved past it, but I'm afraid that with the comments that have been hurled back and forth, we're back into the kind of divisiveness that is so destructive to our national spirit.
Other Republicans were either quiet or preferred to sidestep the issue. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said it was time for all public figures to soften their rhetoric.
Well, the president's not a racist. The president's not a racist. And I think the tone of all of this is not good for the country. But it's coming from all different ideological points of view. That's the point.
New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is among the four House members targeted by the president. She urged Americans not to be distracted by the president's attacks.
And so the first note that I want to tell children across this country is that no matter what the president says, this country belongs to you. Mm-hmm. And it belongs to everyone.
This latest clash between the president and Democrats is a likely preview of next year's presidential campaign. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, meanwhile, the U.S. House of Representatives voted Tuesday to condemn President Trump for so-called racist comments against the four minority Democratic congresswomen, a symbolic vote aimed at shaming Trump and his fellow Republicans who stood by him. Tempers flared in the hours leading up to the vote that mainly split across party lines, the culmination of 3 days of outrage sparked by a Trump tweet storm that diverted attention from all other business in Washington. Democrats, who have a majority in the House, passed the symbolic resolution of condemnation Tuesday evening, which said the House strongly condemns President Donald Trump's racist comments that have legitimized and increased fear and hatred of new Americans and people of color. Only four Republicans joined the Democrats to support the measure. Joining us now to talk about the political aspects of this is Kyle Condit, managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Thank you for being with us. So are you surprised that most Republicans stood by President Trump and refused to condemn the president for his statements?
Generally speaking, the Republicans who have criticized the president at times have paid a price for that. And ultimately, you know, I think that while there have been a number of Republicans who have expressed their personal disagreement with what the president said, they may not want to actually go on the record as condemning him. So that was reflected in the vote. There was, I think there were four Republicans, and then Justin Amash, former Republican turned independent, who voted with the Democrats on this. But again, you know, it's Trump's party, and despite his many outrageous comments, his party sticks with him most of the time.
Obviously, Trump has a history of what critics would consider race baiting. He seems to be ramping it up lately, obviously targeting these four very progressive Democratic women. Is that the beginning of the presidential campaign, and is it all basically politically driven for that reason?
Look, I don't think the president does these things by accident, and I think that the president and many other Republicans are trying to define the Democratic Party by these kind of far-left House members, all of whom are women of color. I think that the president believes that in that sort of contrast, he wins. Now, I will say that I think it's important to remember that by the time we get to this point in the calendar next year, there's going to be a Democratic presidential nominee, and that person is going to really be the face of the Democratic Party. I mean, I think for as much as Republicans want to run against certain members of the House, you know, the Democratic Party is going to have a new leader in 2020. We don't know who that person's going to be. And so from that standpoint, I kind of wonder how much all of this stuff actually matters, and that the face of the Democratic Party and against Trump.
It certainly seems like we're starting to hear more and more Republicans use the word socialist. Obviously, that seems to be a bad word for voters. They seem uncomfortable with that word, and Republicans seem to know that that's a trigger for maybe losing some votes for Democrats. So how far do you think Republicans are willing to go to toe the party line with President Trump? Do you think there is any line that he could cross at this point that they wouldn't follow suit?
I'm not sure there's anything the president could say that would lose him his party. I think the only way his party deserts him is if the rank-and-file Republicans desert the president, and that surely has not happened, as we've seen in many, many opinion polls over his presidency, that even though his approval rating is weak nationally, it's very strong with Republicans. And, from that standpoint, I think that Republican lawmakers somewhat follow their own voters, and that the Republican voters stick with Trump, therefore the lawmakers do as well. And I think they also recognize, practically speaking, that if the president goes down to defeat next year, he may very well drag his party down with him. And so from that standpoint, I think it sort of forces a level of unity on the Republicans and the Democrats, too. I think that we're just in an era where you're not really seeing all that much party defection going on. As to the socialist label Republicans applying to Democrats, that's nothing new. I mean, Republicans have been calling Democrats, you know, too far left and socialists for decades. It's just a question as to whether the charge actually sticks. And look, I think the president is trying to make this election in 2020 a choice, really, as opposed to a referendum on him. I think if the election is a referendum on him, he's probably not going to win. But if it's a choice between what he can successfully characterize as far-left Democratic policy alternatives versus Republican alternatives that, whatever one thinks of them, have not tanked the economy and not led to massive problems overseas. That's what he wants this election to be about. And again, I think so much of this is going to be determined by who the presidential nominee is for the Democrats and how they are able to defend their own policy proposals. And I suspect that for as much as the Democratic field has gone to the left during the primary season, they'll probably try to come back toward the middle more in the general election. And we'll just have to see how much the things that they say now might impact public perceptions of them and give Republicans ammunition to use against them.
That's Kyle Condit, managing editor for Sabatow's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Thank you for being with us. President Trump's moves to effectively end asylum at the southern border are expected to take effect. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
The Trump administration's new rule would cover countless would-be refugees, many of whom are fleeing violence and poverty in Central America. Migrants who pass through another country on their way to the U.S. would not be eligible for asylum. The rule also applies to children who cross the border alone. Mexican Foreign Relations Secretary Marcelo Ebrard says his country does not agree with any measure that limits access to asylum. The new rule is certain to face legal challenges. Mike Hemp in Washington.
Here are some of the stories we're following at VOANews.com. The former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens has died at the age of 99. The U.S. again is facing a deadline to increase its borrowing limit. Refugees blame the Democratic Republic of Congo's chronic violence on a battle for mineral wealth. And a new report urges world action to save insects. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Survivors scrambled for higher ground as torrential monsoon rain swept away homes and triggered landslides across Asia Tuesday, with official counts of people affected in the millions. The monsoon is crucial for irrigation and groundwater supplies in the impoverished region, which is home to a fifth of the world's population. But the downpours have wreaked havoc again this year across India, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Pakistan, with people, dwellings, and boats in remote low-lying areas washed away. Monsoons are nothing new to the area, but their frequency and intensity have increased. VOA Asia's Ira Melman's talked about it with Michael Kugelman, Senior Associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C.
The first thing to keep in mind here is that South Asia, the countries we're talking about, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, these are some of the most climate-vulnerable countries in the world. Mainly because of their geographic position, in many cases low-lying states, a lot of densely populated coastal areas. So flooding can literally be a mass killer, and it certainly causes major economic damage and it displaces people. So occasionally these things make headlines when you have these catastrophic events, but it is very much a reality. It's something that we're going to be having to live with for quite some time. And I think the question is, are these countries taking the proper steps to mitigate against the problem? Now, one of the bright spots is that in Bangladesh, which is, I would say, perhaps one of the most climate vulnerable countries in the world, Bangladesh has been running exercises involving its military in which they do these simulations of some type of natural disaster where you have large numbers of casualties and you have mass displacement. And you actually have these exercises that bring in the military and they try to essentially address, come to the rescue and address this challenge. So I think it's not a bad idea. It certainly goes against the orthodoxy of what militaries are meant to do, particularly in democracies. But I think there's something to be said that, it sort of conveys this idea that climate change and natural disasters are a national security threat in so many of these countries in the region, not only in South Asia, but in large parts of the world.
Well, since we're talking about Bangladesh, they have a bigger population now, if you count Cox's Bazar, which is housing tens of thousands of Rohingya refugees, and it's really reportedly hurting those people there. There are deaths. There are people who are just can't come out of their lean-tos if they're not destroyed. There's mud everywhere. How much more can they take?
Yeah, no, I mean, the Rohingya are just, it's one of the most tragic stories, and really one of the most underreported stories as well. You're right. I mean, I think Bangladesh has attracted a lot of praise for how it's been one of the few countries to actually take in large numbers of Rohingya refugees and actually treat them fairly well, of course, relatively speaking. You have many Rohingya who are in these camps and in very bad conditions. And, you know, there have been rumors that you would have a number of Rohingya in Bangladesh sent to this literally deserted island off the coast of Bangladesh that's never been inhabited, and it is wildly vulnerable to climate change. And I think we have this wake-up call in recent days about how real that threat of climate change is. So this idea of trying to improve the plight of Rohingya by easing issues of overcrowding, which you have in these camps in Cox Bazar, sending them to this deserted island where there may be fewer people, but there would be a whole lot of other threats as well, one of them being climate change and flooding risks. It really is such a sad state of affairs.
Well, is there anything that can be done to alleviate this situation besides just saying this is the way it's going to be? It might get worse and we just have to deal with it?
Yeah, well, no, we don't want to have to leave it at that. You know, I think that, you know, the UN has tried to do a good job of getting more countries and entities to commit to more humanitarian assistance for the Rohingya, particularly in Bangladesh, where you have, you know, several thousand that went into that country from Burma several years back. And if you could have more resources to be able to settle these folks in less crowded but still safe places that are not deserted islands, I think that would be an achievement. But unfortunately, we live in an era where donor fatigue is a big problem. And, you know, I think that the UN has really struggled to meet a lot of its appeals, its humanitarian appeals in terms of getting the money that it's tried to get. But I think that's where, you know, you need an organization like the UN, one of the few global organizations that really has taken a strong, has made a strong commitment to ease the plight of the Rohingya in terms of the humanitarian challenges. So I think that we just have to hope that the UN is able to get more of the support and assistance that it really needs to try to improve the plight of these Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh and in all of the other countries that many of them have settled in.
All right. That was VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Michael Kugelman, Senior Associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. Foreign ministers from some 100 countries were joined at the State Department by survivors of recent attacks at churches, mosques, and synagogues for a ministerial urging tolerance and respect for religious pluralism around the world. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain files this report from the State Department.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and U.S. Ambassador for Religious Freedom Sam Brownback said this Religious Freedom Summit is intended to get people of different faiths to come together in the face of religious persecution and deadly attacks on places of worship.
All people from every place on the globe must be permitted to practice their faith openly in their homes, in their places of worship, in the public square, and believe what they want to believe.
Survivors of recent religious persecution and attacks provided powerful testimony, including Nadia Murad, a Yazidi and former Islamic State group captive from northern Iraq.
History and research have taught us time and time again that genocide is an ongoing process. Nearly 350,000 Yazidis are still stranded in IDP camps in Kurdistan. Over 3,000 Yazidi women and children remain missing. In 2014, the international community rallied behind the Yazidi cause. Today, the Yazidi have largely been abandoned.
Yamini Ravi Dran survived this year's Easter Sunday shootings at Christian churches in Sri Lanka.
The impact it has had on our community, in particularly the Christian community, it has left us with a fear psychosis like never before.
Farid Ahmed survived the shooting at a mosque in Christchurch, New Zealand, but his wife was killed as she tried to push his wheelchair to the exit. He said his faith taught him to forgive the killer.
Quran has taught me that if anyone does bad stuff to you, in return do good. اِدْفَعْ بِالَّتِي أَحْسَنْ. If anyone does evil to you, do the opposite. So he gave me hatred, and I gave him love.
The survivors said the tragedies have helped people of different faiths unite against bigotry and hatred. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Simple things such as washing hands or brushing teeth can prevent diseases and help people enjoy healthier lives. But the idea of raising awareness about health habits was the inspiration behind a Girl Scouts project that so motivated one scout that she ended up embarking on a passionate journey to help girls thousands of miles away. Faith Lapidus narrates this report by Faiza El-Masri.
Years of being a Girl Scout prepared Nyla Mpofu to serve others.
When it was time for my gold award, I was trying to think outside the box. So I decided to help girls in Zimbabwe.
The 16-year-old high school student made collection boxes available at various locations in her Virginia neighborhood for people to donate personal health products and clothes.
After that, I just started receiving donations endlessly and, like, getting the word out with my friends, and then they told, like, their parents and stuff.
Right now, we are currently getting the care packages together.
Months of generous donations resulted in mountains of daily essentials and feminine hygiene products she needed for the project.
So inside the bags, I have a toothbrush and a towel and then underwear. And when I get down to Zimbabwe, I'm going to be adding toothpaste and extra towels and pads.
Help for Others is a local nonprofit run by Nyla's mother, Gloria Mpofu.
I supported her in, you know, helping her with the flyers, just helping her to get the word out and connecting her with individuals in Zimbabwe.
Nyla traveled to Zimbabwe and met with teen girls in suburban areas, distributing the donated care packages and holding a seminar on hygiene.
They talked about how it's important, simple things as just washing hands, you know, just being able to maintain a clean environment can help, you know, the girls and the women in the communities just have a healthier lifestyle.
Nyla also gave printed information to the participants.
They can, like, look back and, like, teach it to their younger siblings or just for themselves to have knowledge about hygiene and the menstrual cycle and stuff like that.
A project that began as a way to help girls in Zimbabwe ended up showing Nyla her future potential.
And it made me realize that I could do so much and to not think lower about any situation that I'm in because of, like, taking the lead in this role and, like, planning the events and stuff like that. So it was, like, a great impact.
And the sweet memory of the trip, she says, is priceless. For writer Faiza El-Masri in Sterling, Virginia, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
With all this romantic atmosphere, disasters in...
Beyoncé's new album, inspired by The Lion King, features collaborations with husband Jay-Z and daughter Blue Ivy Carter. Beyoncé announced Tuesday that The Lion King, The Gift, which will be released Friday, also includes songs with Kendrick Lamar, Childish Gambino, Pharrell, Tierra Whack, and Jessie Reyes. On the show Good Morning America, Beyoncé talks about the music's inspiration.
The soundtrack is a love letter to Africa, and I wanted to make sure we found the best talent from Africa and not just, you know, use some of the sounds and did my interpretation of it. I wanted it to be authentic to what is beautiful about the music in Africa.
On the new version of The Lion King in theaters Friday, Beyoncé voices the character of Nala. Beyoncé curated and executive produced The Lion King, The Gift. Her song, Spirit, released last week, is featured in the film and appears on both the official Lion King soundtrack as well as The Lion King, The Gift. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. Stealing through the life's uncertainties, love is where they are. And if he falls in love tonight, it can be assumed his carefree days with us are history. In short, our pal is doomed.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering Africa news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction in any country of any individual who committed, conspired to commit, or aided in the execution of the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attack. From November 26 to 29, 2008, 10 individuals associated with the terrorist group Lashkar-e-Taiba carried out a series of coordinated assaults against multiple targets in Mumbai, India. The attack resulted in the deaths of 166 people, including 6 Americans. The United States is committed to working with our international partners to identify and bring to justice those responsible for the 2008 Mumbai attack. The Department of State's November 26, 2018 announcement marked the third Rewards for Justice reward offer seeking information on the perpetrators of the Mumbai attack. In April 2012, the Department of State announced reward offers for information that brings to justice Lashkar-e-Taiba founder Hafiz Mohammed Saeed and Hafiz Abdul Rahman Maki, another senior Lashkar-e-Taiba leader. In December 2001, the Department of State designated Lashkar-e-Taiba as a foreign terrorist organization in accordance with Section 219 of the Immigration and Nationality Act as amended. Foreign terrorist organization designations play a critical role in our fight against terrorism and are an effective means of curtailing support for terrorist activities and pressuring groups to get out of the terrorism business. In May 2005, the United Nations 1267 Sanctions Committee added Lashkar-e-Taiba to the consolidated UN Security Council sanctions list. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. On a case-by-case basis, the U.S. government may determine to relocate an informant and their family as appropriate. If you have information on the 2008 Mumbai attack, submit a tip at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. In North America, call 1-800-877-3927.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in African news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Milton.